The last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Dr. Jack Lambert, Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at the Mater Hospital and UCD School of Medicine, is our first guest. Jack, just briefly, of course, we've had news today of another vaccine being announced. What do you make of that news?
I think it's great that vaccines are in the pipeline. But like I said, the rollout of those vaccines are going to take probably 6 to 12 months. So I think we actually have to, you know, not just sit in lockdown waiting for the vaccines. We need to do lots of stuff to continue to live with COVID until the vaccines become available and are rolled out to, 2 million or how many million are they planning vaccinating in Ireland?
Of course, it sounds like we're going to have tighter restrictions because the government tomorrow is going to be asked to stop the purchase of takeaway pints from pubs, to stop people gathering in the streets to drink them. What do you make of that?
Well, I think we just keep on focusing on, you know, some very small parts of the issue here. You know, the issue is that, you know, COVID right now is circulating in very small numbers in Ireland. Because of the lockdown, but even before the lockdown, it wasn't in huge numbers. And the issue is, how do we continue to keep the virus suppressed if we just keep on saying that, you know, that a barber can't work in a barber shop, you know, you can't do a takeaway, you can't do this. People are going to just find another way of getting alcohol and you know, take it to their house and probably party in larger numbers, and in the long run, I think it's going to backfire. I think we need to find a way to get the Irish behind us to really become a part of the COVID prevention effort rather than pointing fingers at them every time you find somebody doing something wrong.
So what sort of environment do you think should we be living in? What sort of restrictions should there be in place beyond telling people to wash their hands, wear a mask, stay 2 meters distant from everybody else?
Well, I think we need to get that message right. Countries that have done that have really low COVID numbers. You know, if you go to look at Asia, they're succeeding economically. They're continuing to have, you know, it's a bit artificial, but they've got all the COVID precautions in place, and they're living with COVID. If you look at many places in Europe and North America, everybody's rebelling against that and doing it all wrong, saying that masks don't work. You know, of course, masks work for respiratory infections. But I think we actually have to have our own Irish plan that we are an island. We have opportunities to keep the virus suppressed. We need to deal with the Northern Ireland situation. And when we come out of lockdown in May, we didn't put any detailed effort into the community that opened up. And a lot of the community settings opened up quite unsafely. So I think next time when we open up, we need to have all of our ducks in a row. We need to have all of the masks, the social distancing, the hand washing. We need to get it done down right. Otherwise, we'll be in and out of lockdown, or we'll never be out of lockdown because the numbers are never going to be suppressed. This is a very contagious virus.
But Jack, I suppose people want to know is, can they go to their gyms? Can they play golf and tennis safely, play other sports safely? Can they eat in restaurants with other people? Can they go and have a couple of pints in pubs if they promise and adhere to the rules to stay socially distanced? Or is that a bit of a pipe dream at present?
No, I think it's absolutely achievable. It has been achieved in other countries, you know. If we can keep the virus down to very small numbers, you know, if the numbers are circulating like they are currently in the UK, there's no way that you can do anything. You know, you can't even consider opening up a pub. But if I think moving forward, if our numbers stay low, and you know, is it safe to go into a takeaway? Is it safe to go into a restaurant where you're socially distanced? Is it safe to kind of start opening up, you know, certain locations, gyms, for example? My gym, I said, it's not safe. It wasn't safe from day one. So I wouldn't go to my gym right now because they've got lovely signs up, but they have unlimited numbers of people coming in, and I don't think that's a safe situation. So I think we actually have to put lots of detail into opening up safely and give people instructions on how they can do it. Have them understand the virus, have them understand the value of masks, social distancing, protecting themselves, protecting others. If we did all of that, I think we've got a chance of, you know, living with COVID and not going into repeated lockdowns.
Okay, I'll come back to you in a second, Jack Lambert, but I want to bring in the leading economist and commentator, Dan O'Brien, because economically, when it comes to things like the maintenance of businesses and the maintenance of paying jobs, how important is it that we get some sort of better balance than we may have at present?
I think it's extremely important, Matt. I figure, you know, we hear many every day numbers about COVID infections, and of course that is so important that we know that. This is an extremely contagious disease, as the doctor just mentioned there, and we've seen it surge back across Europe again. But we also need to be aware of the economic consequences. So over the past few weeks, unemployment has risen by more than 100,000. Now, I don't think that's a number that we hear often enough, more than 100,000 people, in addition to the huge numbers, hundreds of thousands, that have been made unemployed since the pandemic erupted, another 100,000 in recent weeks. And, you know, we need to ask, is closing down a store that sells clothing going to have that much of an impact on the transmission of the disease? And if we compare it with the likelihood of picking up the disease in, say, a supermarket compared to a clothes shop, what is the difference? And certainly the government's own figures don't point to retail being a source of where people pick it up. People overwhelmingly pick it up in private houses. That's what the government's own figures show. So there is a trade-off here. If we have 100,000 people extra out of work because we're closing non-essential businesses, how much is that reducing the transmission of the virus? And the government's own figures suggest that it's minuscule, that it's really not having an effect. We know it's having a massive effect on employment, but doesn't seem, from the government's own figures, to be having an effect on transmission. So we need to have a conversation around that balance.
Okay, stay with us, Dan. I want to go back to you, Dr. Jack Lambert, based on a lot of the comments that are coming in from listeners, some of whom you might call COVID deniers, who think that this illness does not really exist, or that if it does exist, it's nowhere near as serious as has been suggested, and who worried, and one here says, producers of this programme want to take away my rights to freedom. This is the great reset. It's all about drastically limiting human freedom. What do you say to those people who may have, well, some people may have, like Dan, concerns about the extent of the restrictions, but what do you say to people who believe this is all some sort of giant hoax?
It's absolutely not a hoax. I'm an infectious disease doctor. I was there February, March, April, May in the Mater Hospital, and it was quite scary. And I have colleagues who were in London, and it was 10 times scarier. It was unmanageable because the virus got out of control, okay? It's a respiratory virus. It's a dangerous virus. But flu is a dangerous virus. Flu pandemics have killed millions. Coronavirus is a respiratory virus. It's real. And masks prevent it from spreading. So I think it's real, so I'm not going to get into that. You can argue with Trump supporters, or you can just let them be, that they have their own opinion, but they shouldn't be getting time on the airs, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, we're not. I'm just putting right. That point to you, Joseph, yeah. Like that. And, you know, so anyway, we're not going down that particular yeah. route. But what I am interested in, though, and I think this is relevant to the pieces that Dan has picked up on, you know, what are the numbers now going into ICU by comparison with 6 months ago? Is that manageable? And are the number of deaths which are attributable to this illness and nothing else sufficiently low to allow us to take the risk of opening up from the restrictions a bit?
Well, absolutely, yes. I think there's too much scaremongering going on with numbers being released here, there and everywhere. You know, stay in lockdown. The ICU numbers are going up. Now, the ICU numbers in March in my intensive care unit were, you know, we're high, you know, and we had the ICU filled with patients with COVID, with real respiratory disease, you know, but my neighbors, as of 2 weeks ago, thought we were in the same situation, because this is the way it's been portrayed by the government. The reality is there were 50 total in the whole country and 20 ICUs spread around the country. So that's two people with COVID. That's not every ICU filled with COVID. So we're in a totally different situation than we were before. And so I think we actually, absolutely, we need a measured response. You know, are barbershops safe? Yes. Are, you know, clothing stores safe? Yes. But there's certain, we need to kind of come up with a detailed plan of what's safe and what's not safe to allow people to continue to enlist for economic and, you know, and psychological and other reasons, and not use the excuse that, oh, our ICUs could become overwhelmed like they are in Liverpool. That, you know, let's think about how we can keep the ICUs from not being overwhelmed. Let's build more ICUs. You know, we need announcement from the government, and when, you know, all those ICUs that have been promised, you know, when is the building starting? We knew this from May. We need to kind of come up with a plan that isn't a scare tactic to keep people in lockdown because of all of the collateral damage from COVID concern.
Okay, back to you in this, Dan O'Brien. I mean, how difficult would you think this is for government, which has to worry about the public finances and the costs to it of maintaining the PUP and all the rest of it, but also is fearful of being lambasted if it presides over an opening up which leads to many more deaths?
Yep, and that's clearly a major issue. And just let me say on this conspiracy theory stuff, you know, go to any reputable news source anywhere in Europe and North America, and you'll see just what impact this is having on hospitals. Anybody who says this is a hoax is a fantasist. This is clearly a very serious problem. It is not bubonic plague, it's not Black Death, but it is a very serious problem, and anybody who denies that is absolutely wrong. We need to take this very seriously. The question is that do we find ourselves in a couple of years' time that we have had a depression in which we have mass unemployment, we have all sorts of social implications coming out of that, and we look and compare how serious this has been from a health perspective, that one could end up being worse. The collateral damage because of the economic fallout could end up being worse than the health damage. We'll only know that in time, but we need to take it seriously. Let me just say that. So government is in a very difficult position. In terms of governments everywhere in what to do, whether they put the brake on too hard or not hard enough, and certainly some countries in Europe in recent times have not applied the brake enough, and they've seen things run out of control. The question about this is how hard to apply the brake and use those restrictions, and that is a very difficult one. Clearly, in Ireland's case, we slammed the brake on. It's not clear to me from the evidence that the level three restrictions were not working. In fact, all of the indicators started to fall around the time level 5 came in, which, because of the lag effect, doesn't mean that it was level 5. It means level 3 appeared to be working. So it is a very difficult job in terms of how hard to apply that break, and it is a very difficult job for government. There's no doubt about that.
Just to finish with you, Professor Jack Lambert, how worried would you be that other illnesses are not getting suitable treatment because of the concentration on COVID-19?
Well, I think this is exactly the story. There's been a recent white paper released by, you know, a number of GPs and others that are interested in this issue, and they're seeing all of the collateral damage from, you know, from psychiatric problems, from suicides, from, you know, people not coping, people not getting, you know, cancer care, STI care. So yes, there's a lot of collateral damage as we speak, and it's not going to be measured for another 6-12 months. And so I think the plea really is let's not pretend this isn't serious, but all these other conditions are serious as well. We need to kind of have a balanced approach. But it is a respiratory virus, and the message of we need to take this seriously, we need responsible behavior on the part of individuals to do everything they can when we come out of lockdown to prevent, you know, onward transmission.
And Jack, actually, is one other thing I want to put to you, because it's come in, there's a number of texts in this way. How difficult do you think might it be to persuade people to take that vaccine when it's available? I was going to read this one as it is, and apologies to people if they don't like the language. It goes, are you going to inject this vaccine shit into your body? No way, and caps, my body, my choice. Now, how much good have vaccinations done to the general health population in the last century and a half? I'm thinking of things like polio and various other illnesses. What sort of things that we maybe take for granted have we managed to eradicate and deal with as a result of vaccinations?
Absolutely. Vaccinations are absolutely critical. I was vaccinologist at Johns Hopkins. I ran courses. I've known the world's best vaccinologists, Sabin, Salk, and others, and it's absolutely amazing that the difference vaccines have made for childhood illnesses, you know, back in the days when antibiotics weren't available. So yes, vaccines absolutely have their role.
Give me a list of the type of illnesses that we have been eradicated, which you have taken prior to that, hundreds of millions of lives.
Right. So meningitis, meningitis, we don't see childhood meningitis anymore. Overwhelming, pneumococcal disease, lung disease, Haemophilus disease, measles. I saw outbreaks of measles in Haiti. I saw thousands of people dying of measles because they don't only had 28% vaccine coverage in Haiti. So I've seen time and time again, when I've worked in vaccinology and in developed countries, you see such a difference in vaccination. But I just don't think that the COVID vaccine is ready for prime time, and we shouldn't be staying in lockdown until the vaccine comes along, because it's not that simple. It's a new vaccine. It could take 6 to 12 months to roll out. So yeah, when a vaccine comes along, yes, I'll probably take it. But should you be forced to take it? No. In the meantime, many have stood up and says a mask works probably better than any vaccine ever will for a respiratory virus. So I would do that in the meantime.
Thank you very much, Professor Jack Lambert, and also economist and commentator Dan O'Brien.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.